Awesome. Am I on there? Yeah? Good? All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Pastor Eric. I appreciate the opportunity to come up here and just begin to share a little bit about our teens. Now, before we get started, I want you guys to understand, we're going to talk about teens today. We're going to talk about them. Now, this does not mean that if you are not a teen, you can just stop listening. Nope. You have to listen, no matter who you are, no matter what age you are. I don't care if you have already raised your teenagers. I don't care if you never had kids. There is something in this for everybody. And it's not just about raising the teens and being the parent. It's about our responsibilities as a church and what we are supposed to be doing, the examples that we're supposed to be setting. So please listen up. That being said, I want to start with being real transparent with you. I want to talk to you guys about an issue that I have. I've got this really big problem, and I feel like I need to get it out there. I've got to get it out there. So there's this problem that I have in my house, and she's about this tall. And she calls me daddy. So the issue is that when she looks up at me and she says, "Daddy, can you please?" I'm just stuck. I can't do anything. I've got to listen. I mean, you know, not that she has me wrapped around her finger, but maybe she does. I'm not sure. I'm an awful big guy, but somehow I get around that little finger. So there was this one day that we're getting ready to come to church, and I used to, you know, before, I didn't necessarily always have to come with my wife. So I'd be at home with the kids. We're getting ready to come to church this day, and my little girl comes to me and says, "Daddy, can you do my hair?" Up until this point, I had gotten away with, "Go talk to your mama." But this Sunday morning, I didn't have a choice. And so, being the good dad that I am, I went ahead and I got up on YouTube, and I figured out how to braid some hair, which is not easy when you got big old sausage fingers, as people like to say. And she's a little girl. And so if you can throw up that first picture, this is going to be my first attempt at it. You got that, Cheryl? I tried. It's not pretty, but I tried. The problem after that was that she was able to see it. And she said, "No, Dad, that's not good enough. You're going to have to redo it." So I had to redo it, and there's a second attempt. But I think I did pretty good the second time. Look at that. See? Yeah. See? I rocked that out. So I had to redo it. You know, what can you do? But as I was preparing for this message, I came across this passage, this scripture, and it was Isaiah 40, 29, and 31. I'm going to read the whole thing real quick, but there's one word. There's just one word I want to focus on. It says, "He gives power to the weak, and to those who have no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." So, the word that I want to focus on here is this word, wait. I've looked at it. I've read this scripture. I don't even know how many times. But as I was preparing, I looked up. I like to do the word study. I like to go back to the Hebrew. And I looked up that word wait. I don't know why, because it seems pretty straightforward, right? It's wait. Okay, you're going to wait on the Lord. But it actually, when you look into the Hebrew, it paints a picture. So when it's telling you to wait on the Lord, it's talking about you being bound together with the Lord. You intertwining with the Lord. You know, much like that braid in Avery's hair, you're connected in every part with him. So you're waiting on the Lord. So my question today, and my sermon title, if you want to throw it up there, is what are you bound to? What are you intertwined with? And a lot of us, we like to say that real quick word, "Oh, I'm bound to the Lord." But does your life show that? Does your life reflect that? So we're gonna talk about ways that we can make sure that we're bound to him. Make sure that when people look at us, when they look at that what you're braided to, what you're bound to, that they're seeing God. There's one thing in this world today that I think has done more damage than good, 100%. And that is this little thing right here. I remember the day when all you could do was make a phone call on it. And I am that old. You know, I know I don't look it. I mean, you guys are really nice, but I am that old. And so I think that if we want to be proactive with teens, we have to address that. Because this is something that is going to affect you in every way. That this is something that you have to talk about. If you say, I want my teens, I want the teens in this church to grow up to serve God, you've got to talk about this and the things that it does and the things that it shouldn't do. You know, 1 in 10 kids in America under the age of 10 have seen pornography. Why? Because they've got this in their hand. You say, oh, at 8 years old, yeah, you can have this. And you don't put a restriction on it. You say, no, that's okay. They don't know how to find that. They don't have to know how to find it because porn companies develop algorithms to get it into their hands intentionally. They don't care how old the person is on the other side of the screen. The only thing they care about is people clicking on that link. And they say, we can get kids to be addicted to this. And as we get them addicted to this, as we get them to where every time they see a screen, they go, oh, I've got to look at that one thing. Then as they grow into adults, then we can take advantage of that. We can make money on that. That's what they care about. 1 in 10 kids under 10. By the age of 11, 93% of kids have seen pornography. At age 11. You say, well, that's the big one. Okay, yeah, I can protect against that. Let's talk about some of the smaller ones. Social media. What are the dangers that are associated with that? Teens on average spend 7 hours and 22 minutes on their phones a day. Tweens between ages 8 and 12 are not very far behind. They're at 4 hours and 44 minutes. Girls spend a little bit more time than boys on social media. They spend, teenage girls are at about 1.5 hours a day on average. Teenage boys are, I guess, not quite as obsessed with social media. They're only at 51 minutes, so that's, you know, pretty good, right? Yeah. So you look at that and you go, well, why does it matter? They're not hurting anything. They're just talking to their friends, right? Why does it matter if they're on their phones? They're staying out of trouble. They're not out running around causing problems. If we want to raise a generation that will make a difference, this is where it starts, guys. It starts with addressing these issues. This phone, that social media, that Facebook, that Twitter, that TikTok, all of that stuff. 1 Corinthians 15:33. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. You listen to that and you go, well, that doesn't apply, right? I'm not letting them go hang out with bad people. They're just on their phone. It's not talking about a person. What you're putting into you, what you're surrounding yourself with, if it is evil, it doesn't matter how good you are. It's gonna bring corruption. It's gonna bring a downfall. It applies to every single area. Whatever you are going to dedicate your life to is gonna be what dictates your life. What you're dedicating your time to. What you're allowing your teens to dedicate their time to is what is gonna dictate the person that they turn into. It's gonna dictate their relationship with God. God called us. He said, we're called to be a holy nation. How are we enacting that in our kids? How are we acting that out with our kids? How are we showing that to them? In 1 Peter 2:9, that you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim his praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. You've got to be focused on him because of what all he's done for you. He's saved you. Look at all the things that he's brought you out of. And we honor him by spending hours and hours of the day by on social media, but not 5 minutes with him. It's sad. I've been guilty. I've been guilty some days of sitting there going, man, get to the end of the day. Well, I spent 10 minutes reading my Bible today. Well, and then all of a sudden that little screen report pops up. You spent 45 minutes on Facebook today. How did I do that? My focus wasn't there. Because we are called to be set apart, we have to take that calling seriously. And whatever you feed, whatever you put your time into, is what's going to be seen. I had a youth pastor that he used to say, he was my youth pastor the whole time that I grew up. He used to say these words, he said it was garbage in, garbage out. What you're putting into you is what people are going to see. And you know what? Teens are pretty good actors. They can put on a show. They can come in and they can go, you know what? Yeah, I love God. And then the next day at school, you're getting a call from the principal going, oh yeah, he got into a fight and he was cussing at this guy. Oh, you go, but he was at church yesterday. He said he loved God. You can only act for so long. You can only put on that show for so long. You're going to get caught, kids. Your parents are going to figure it out. I didn't know this as a teenager, but I didn't realize that my parents had friends. I had no idea. I would get caught doing something. I said, how did you know that? And my mom would say, well, one of my friends told me. I said, you don't have friends. How could they have told you? They have eyes everywhere. You're not going to get away with it, young people. You might as well just do the right thing, because you're going to get caught. Okay. Colossians 4:5 says, walk in wisdom to those who are outside, redeeming the time. Another version of that, I'm using New King James today in case you want to know. Another version of that says, making the best use of your time. Are you making the best use of your time? As a teenager, as an adult, are you making the best use of your time? Something to ask yourself before anything that you do. When I'm doing this, is it beneficial to the kingdom? Am I lifting my relationship with God through this? Am I building up someone else's relationship by doing this? If it's not beneficial, we've got no place in it. Matthew 6:21, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is another one of those that I love. I love the word in here. That word treasure, it's talking about whatever you're outstretched before, whatever you kneel down to. We associate that with money, but it doesn't have to be money. Whatever it is that is the most important thing to you, that's where your heart is. And you can't say, God is the most important thing to me, and only spend 5 minutes talking to him a day. And spend 6 hours on social media. You have to show that through the time that you spend with him. You sit here and go, well, you're supposed to be talking to teens, but it sounds like you're yelling at me. But, well, I kind of am, guys. Because if we want our teens to succeed, we have to be that example. We have to be the ones that are showing them the right things. When I was a teenager, I was 16 years old, I had these two men, well, really three men, that poured into me. None of them were my dad. My dad was an amazing man. But as I was a teenager, he wasn't a Christian. He wasn't somebody that was going to encourage me in that relationship. So I thank God for three men that stepped up in my life. They had no reason to be talking to me. These are older men. I say that they're older. Now I'm like almost their age. To me, they were really old back then. I still remember them. I still cherish the time that I had with them. I had a guy, his name was Dallas Conley. He used to get up early in the morning. It was early for me. It wasn't early for him. But he used to get up early in the morning and go have coffee with me. Well, I didn't drink coffee. I drank some like fruity thing. But he was just a guy in the church that said, I'm going to pour into this young man. So I know That's the point that I want to make with you. Just because you don't have a team doesn't mean you can't affect a team. It doesn't mean you can't change somebody's life. I had two other men, my youth pastor. My youth pastor used to pray for me constantly. It was needed because I did dumb things. But he poured into me so much. Another guy, his name was John Schaefer. He used to take me out to work with him. And we would always talk about God. I'm like, you told me we're going to be working today, and we're talking about God. What's going on here? I just didn't understand it, But he brought me alongside him and said, you know what, I'm going to pour into this guy. He was amazing. And that affected who I was. That affected who I became. When you see that teenager in here, don't look down at them. Don't look at them and go, you know what? They're being too loud. I don't like the way they dress. I don't like that they have flip-flops on. Old people can wear flip-flops, okay? I was banished from doing it today, but, look at them and go, you know what? I can change them. I can make a difference in their life just by spending time with them, just by pouring into them. I can show them what it is to put God first above every other thing. I can show them. I can be an example to them, because you can. You can make a difference whether you've never had a teen or you've raised 10 of them. You can make a difference in one's life just by taking an interest, just by being interested in their life. So you go, you know what? I've messed up. I've made mistakes. I've not been doing this right, okay? So maybe you're a parent and you say, I'm not doing the things I should be. So how do I fix it? How do I change that? Maybe you're a teen and you go, I'm not doing the things I should be. How do I change it? I'm gonna go through three simple steps, three simple things that we should be doing as adults, as men and women of God, to help to be that person that affects a change in a young student. Psalm 119:9. How can a young person stay on the path of purity? By living according to your word. In New King James, which is, like I said, the one I'm using, says, how can a young man cleanse his way? By taking heed according to your word. That word cleanse, it talks about being translucent. How can a young man, young woman, be transparent before God? Be exposed. The answer is so simple. By living according to your word. So how do you do that? You do that by dedicating your time to God. You do that by spending time with him. When you get up in the morning, is the first thing you go to grab your phone and look at, what did somebody post last night? Or what cool new videos on there? What changed? Or is the first thing you go to, God, thank you for today. God, I'm going to go to the bathroom and because we all know we take our phones to the bathroom, right? We all know that. You get up in the morning and go, I got to go to the bathroom. Let me grab my phone, because you can't go to the bathroom without your phone. So maybe while you're sitting there, deep in study, you could pull up your Bible instead of pulling up Facebook. And you go, I'm going to look at that. Because while this, like I said, is a horrible thing, it can be used for good. Because it's all about, this itself is not evil. How we use it is what causes a problem. So, In order for us to really see that change in kids, we have to be an example. Now, we heard those amazing statistics earlier about how much time young people spend on their phone. Now, go ahead and just step back for a second, because you might not like the answer here to how much time adults spend on the phone. This is crazy. In 2018, an adult spent an hour average of 142 minutes a day on their phone. In 2019, that goes up to 2.5 hours. In 2020, it goes up to 3 hours. 3 hours a day on social media. Let me get that right. Not on your phone, on social media. Americans on average, adult Americans on average, spend 5.4 hours on their phone a day. If we want our teens to change, we have to be the example. We have to be the ones that are changing first. We have to be the ones that are leading them. We can't expect them to be a good Christian if we've never talked to God. We can't expect them to put their phones down and get off of social media if the only thing they ever see us doing is spending time looking at that screen. Guys, an amazing practice. And I started it quite a while ago. When I walk through the door, my phone gets set down. You know? Set down, screen down. And if you've ever been to my house, a lot of times I come to the end of the night and I'm searching for my phone. Because I'm like, I don't even remember where I set it at. You know? When I get home from work, my priorities shifts. I mean, I understand when you're at work, you got to be on your phone, you got to be on your computer, you got to be on your tablet, especially nowadays. But when you get home, when you get to spend that time with them, be an example, put it down. Say, you know what? This time's for my kids. This time's for my family. This time is dedicated to them. You know? I see people get more excited about a ding on their phone than they are about coming into this place and worshiping God. They look at it, they set their phone down somewhere, and then that thing beeps, and it doesn't matter. I mean, I've seen people almost drop a baby because their phone rang. They go, oh my goodness, I got to get to that. You never know how important it is. Guess what? It's a telemarketer. Nobody's calling you at 8 o'clock at night but except for a telemarketer. It ain't that important. And if it is that important, there's this awesome thing called voicemail. They're going to leave it. You can check it later. Don't let the devil interrupt your time with your kids. Or other people. You know, we're guilty of it not just with our teenagers. We're guilty of it with other people. You go say, hey, I want to go get together. I want to go hang out. Let's sit down. Let's play a game. And you look around the room and everybody's on their phone. You know, hey, it's your turn to play. Oh, yeah, I'm going to put my phone down. Sorry. You know, spend time with each other. Be with each other. Be an example. Yeah. You know, and we have a tendency to... you know, make excuses for why we got to do it and say, hey, you know what, I'm paying my bills. Well, like I said, you're not going to the bathroom to pay bills. You're going to the bathroom to play Candy Crush. We all know it. Or whatever that game is that y'all play. Come on. Another thing we got to do is we got to set boundaries. You know, this is something that's unpopular as parents. You know, you got to be an example. You got to say things right. You got to do things right. But you got to set some boundaries for these kids. For these teenagers, guess what? You aren't going to be their best friend. Like I already told you, the secret's out. You have other friends. You don't need another one in your teenager. When they get 30, they'll love you. Until then, just pretend like, you know, you've got other friends. Even if you don't, just pretend like it, okay? You don't need to be their best friend. You got to set boundaries for them. It says in 1 Corinthians 10:23, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. So those boundaries should include that right there. Say, well, it's okay for them to be on it, but is it building them up? Is it promoting the type of change we want to see in them? Or is it tearing them down? How can we expect them to be set apart if we don't help? How can we expect them to live a life for God if we're not there for them? You know, sometimes you know, one of the things that I know that I'm concerned with my kids is, you know, they talk about peer pressure. Talk about peer pressure all the time. What are my kids going to cave to? What decision are my kids going to make when they are out there? When I'm not standing over their shoulder? Is that we preach to our kid, you cannot cave to peer pressure. What do you say no? You say no to drugs. There's a whole program about it. But then we as adults, we turn around and we do it ourselves. One of the most common things, one of the things that I guess drives me crazy is seeing an 8-year-old with a cell phone. Because that is nothing more than a parent caving to peer pressure. Said, well, all the other kids have it. So they got to have it. When my oldest turned 12, he said, I want a cell phone. And his reasoning was, everybody else has one. I had a decision to make. Am I going to show him what I mean when I say you don't cave to peer pressure? When I say, I don't care if everybody else has it, you are not going to have it. I don't care if everybody else is attached to a screen, you are not going to have it. And you know what? Through a little bit of research, I found this awesome little thing. It's almost like a walkie-talkie, if we all know what those are, you know. But it satisfied him as a cell phone. You know what's cool about it is he clips it on his belt. He can talk to me. He can only talk to me and the people I say that he can talk to. He can't talk to nobody else. But it's also got this cool little tracker in it. I'm not going to tell him that. He knows. Never mind. He's here. I can see where he's at. I know exactly where he is. Of course, the problem is getting him to carry it with him when he leaves. You know, but you can find alternatives. You don't have to cave into that and go, well, you're 13 now, so you get a phone. Nope. I got a phone when I was able to pay for my own. You know, that was the day I got it. So until then, my kids are going to have a little tracker that they can talk to me on. And that's it. And that's all. We have to be that example. We have to set those boundaries and say, this is the line. We're not going to cross it. This is where it is. We're going to remove even that temptation from your life because you don't need it. The other thing you got to do is you got to be involved, guys. And you say, well, obviously I'm involved. I go to work every day. I put food on the table. I give them something to eat. I give them a nice dry room to sleep in. I wash their laundry. I fold their clothes. I'm very involved. I'm there, right? Being in the same room, being in the same house as a kid doesn't mean that you're involved. You can raise a kid without them ever respecting you, without them ever coming to you for advice, because all you ever did was be in the same house. You didn't get involved. You didn't pry. You didn't tell them that, you know what? I care about you, and I care about you enough that I'm gonna pry enough to really know what's going on with you. The laziest question that a parent can ask at the end of the day, you pick up your kids from school, and they come in, and you say, how was your day? That is the laziest question you can ask. Because you know what the answer to that is? Yeah, it's okay. And then you go, oh, well, if that's all you got to say, then I'm done. I'm not going to talk to you about it. How about we try and be a little more creative with it? You go, oh, hey, how was math class? Of course, in order for you to do that, you have to know that they're taking math. You know, you have to spend that time with them. Because if you ask them how math class was and they're not taking it, they're going to be like, you ain't paying attention? I don't have that class, you know. But you have to be involved. You have to know what they're doing. You have to know where they're at. And ask directed questions. And they say, oh, yeah, what'd you have for lunch? Oh, I had this. Who'd you sit with? You know, ask specific questions. That's the only way you're going to get a specific answer out of a teenager is ask a specific question. You ask a general question, then the answer is yes, okay, no, yes, ma'am. That's it. That's all. That doesn't help you to determine how their day went in any way. We have to pry. We have to get in there and be concerned about what's going on in their lives. I'm going to bring it back to, in order for our teens to succeed, we have to make sure that they are bound to the right things. That they are bound to God, that they're not bound to society, that they're not bound to their phone, that they're not bound to social media. We have to show them what it is, be an example to them of what it looks like to be bound to God, to be intertwined with Him, to be consumed with Him. Real quick, guys, I'm going to go ahead and close. I went way over my time. I apologize. But today, I know there's some of you that might be in this room. You go, you know what? I've struggled. I've made mistakes. If I go ahead and have leaders come on up to the altar, I want to open the altar. I want to get to that because it's important. You say, I'm in a place where I've made mistakes. I've failed. I've not been a good example to the kids in my life. And I'm not just saying your kids. Maybe you've not been a good example to the kids in the church. You say, they look at me and they don't see God. There could be those of us in that place today. Today is a day that you're able to be set free from that. Today is a day that you're able to be changed. You go, from this moment on, I'm going to be an example. I'm going to be someone that when a teenager looks at me, when a young person looks at me, they're going to go, you know what, that's a guy I want to learn from. That's a guy, that's a girl, that's a woman that I want to learn from. So some of you, like I said, you might be in that place where you go, you know, I've made mistakes. As we begin to pray, I do want you to just go ahead and make your way to the altar. Allow us to pray with you. Allow us to pray for you. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter how many mistakes you've made. You can make a change starting today, starting now.